Now we will look at the concept of the living wages. Now what is happening is we are generating an additional layer. So students, we are generating an additional layer over our basic minimum wage layer. Now this layer is an improvement in the structure of the wages that are being discussed. So students, a living wage is basically one which should enable the worker to provide for himself or herself if that person is a lady, and their family, not only for the bare essentials of food, clothing and shelter, which is our roti, kapda and makan, but also a measure of frugal comfort. Now what is frugal comfort? Frugal comfort is a thin layer of luxury over the bare necessities. It's not the luxury that we usually see on the roads, like a person riding in an Audi or a BMW. That's not the luxury I'm mentioning. But maybe on Diwali, they might want to purchase a box of mithai. So this is a frugal comfort. By saving some money and availing an installment scheme, they might purchase a second-hand television. So if they don't have a television in their small room, they might do that so that the evenings are spent in entertainment. They might want to purchase, if they have a kerosene stove, they might want to purchase maybe a basic, you might say, gas cylinder or a gas shegri, which we say, a burner. So these are a few measures of the frugal comforts which they might enjoy living in a city. So as I mentioned, they were living in a small village close to Satara. They moved to Pune for better life. So they would also aspire, like their neighbors, to enjoy these frugal comforts. Living wage for a typical family refers to the family composition most commonly in the country at stake. That is the country that we are referring. For example, a majority of our examples would pertain to India, the country which we are staying in. Okay, so this is calculated on the respective fertility rates as well, the rate of, you know, the birth in this particular context. Now this is the third layer in the wage structure, or the third concept or the category. We know this as the fair wages. So this particular concept is linked with the industry's capability or capacity to pay. It depends on different variables determining wages. A case in point would be, let's suppose a blue-collared worker is currently functioning in a small-scale industry or in a cottage industry, where they are creating maybe some files, or they are creating some packaging material. Now over here, ideally, the compensation for him or her would be relatively less than a multinational company or a giant. So just imagine a person who's just joined Microsoft or Accenture or a Cognizant and is functioning as a housekeeping professional, again a blue-collared job. Now he or she would definitely get a better payment than a housekeeping individual in that small scale or the cottage industry. So the definition of this concept is, fair wage is the wage which is above the minimum wage but below the living wage. So as the saying goes, this will reduce some of the frugal comforts but will ensure that it is better than a minimum wage. So this is the concept of a fair wage. So if I am, you know, let's say a founder of an organization and recruit two housekeeping professionals, what would I do? If the minimum wage in the industry is 200 rupees per day, I will offer them 230 rupees per day, which may be considered as fair because I am putting an increment of 30 rupees per day to their minimum or bare wages. Now, it may not be the same as a living wage because there might be my neighboring industry or company who might offer a 250. So those 20 rupees of increment would lead to frugal comforts in a matter of a few months or a year, which may not be the same in the case of the fair wage. After having discussed the three important concepts of the wage structure, we will now look at the wage components. Now, compensation, it typically includes several financial and non-financial benefits. I'm sure most of us are working professionals with a different variety of experience and have experienced incentives. We've experienced perks. We have experienced recognitions. We've experienced certain times paid trips. All right, we've experienced a payment for our company provided vehicle apart from the salary that is credited into the account. And this specifically is what is being referred to over here. Now, compensation, in a very simple way I've explained, let me just repeat or reiterate the same which pertains to the point provided on the slide. So it includes monetary meaning money related, or something that is paid in terms of cash. So monetary payments like bonuses, the most famous being Diwali bonus. So a majority of blue-collared, white-collared executives, a wide plethora of employees receive bonuses. Especially in India, it's a Diwali bonus. In the Western countries, it may be a bonus pertaining to Christmas or New Year. Profit sharing. These terms, of course, we will extend and explain in subsequent chapters. The overtime pay, a simple concept. Recognition rewards and sales commissions. So if you are working for a sales organization as a sales professional, the projects that you execute or the customers that you gain, you might as well get a commission. As well as non-monetary perks, like a company paid car. So let's say a person is employed as a general manager in a prominent company like Tata. Okay. Now this person, they would get a company paid car where they would have a chauffeur who would drive them to the company and get them back from the organization so that they don't get tired out of commuting. They might also avail of company paid housing and opportunities like stock or options. So these are paid as a non-cash component and they are known as non-monetary perks. Okay, perks are those incentives which keep them working with that organization for a long duration of time. So as discussed in the previous slide, we're going to just have a quick repetition here that wage is basically a monetary compensation paid by an employer, as we have seen with the help of some examples previously. Now, this we have mentioned is an exchange for the work done. For example, a worker in a foundry is constantly lifting heavy machinery, is operating machines, and they need to be paid for that sweat or that work. So that is the function of the wage. Wage means the hourly rate of pay, and salary denotes the monthly rate. For example, on an hourly basis, if they're getting a 50 rupees or 100 rupees, okay, which might lead to a 700 or 800 rupees, or if it's a totally unskilled job for which they are getting, let's say, 25 rupees per hour on a construction site, which would probably lead to that 175 or the 200 rupees that was mentioned. Salary, as has been stated, it's a form of periodic payment from the employer to an employee. So in India, many of us might be aware of the concept of mathadi workers or kamgars, which are picked up from the site. They are picked up from a specific location. These are the unskilled workers who might work from site to site. So the payment might be only presented when they appear in person and work for those hours, but the salary may not be so. Now, another aspect is incentives. Now, these depend on factors like the productivity, the sales, the profit, or the cost reduction efforts. So this can relate to the incentive aspect. For example, there is a worker who has proven himself or herself that they are able to produce more parts or more components in a company. Now, this has been observed by the management. The worker is giving more productivity. He is also influencing others to do so and will be a subject to incentives. So there are individual incentive schemes which apply to a particular employee's performance as well as a group incentive scheme. So for example, that charismatic worker might get an individual incentive. Now when he shares his or her best practices to the group and they begin functioning in a better fashion and they are recognized as one of the best units in that company or factory, they are also liable to be paid something known as the group incentive, and they will fall under the group incentive scheme. Now the next one is the perks or the perquisites. So these are generally not provided to the lower cadre of workers. So the blue collared workers, the operators, or the middle management are not subject to perquisites. These are given to the executive class or the C-suite. So these might be provided to the presidents, the vice president, the CEO, the CEO of the organization, who are usually senior in the rank and file of the organization. Now, as we know, these are people who are the creamy layer and are very few in numbers. And these are subject to a lot of poaching and headhunting by the talent acquisition organizations. For example, a prominent COO, a chief operating officer working for SBI Bank, is spotted and identified by a new bank, maybe a Bandhan Bank. Now, Bandhan Bank is relatively new as compared to maybe an ICICI, an HDFC, or an SBI, and they want the expertise of this COO to work for their organization to build it up. So what would they do? They would try and attract this particular talent. Now, in order to retain this talent, there will be several perquisites which will deter this talented COO from moving away from SBI. Hence, perquisite is a payment or a profit or benefit received in addition to the regular wages or salary, especially when due or expected. So it's the creamy layer which is provided to the employees so that they can be retained. And students, a thing to be kept in mind is that this is usually given to senior people in the rank and file of any organization. Now we also have certain benefits which were discussed, which are non-monetary in nature, and a quick revisit to them is important. So these include things like a challenging job. For example, I have completed a lot of certifications on software development, let's say. And recently I completed and invested time in development of specific niche models in the Python programming language. Now, I'm working as a software engineer for the last, let's say, 12 years and have not received any challenging project recently. And suddenly, my manager informs me that I have to go to the United States, stay there for 2 years and work on niche Python programming modules. So this is going to be perceived by me as a non-monetary benefit, okay, apart from whatever perquisites or whatever incentives I do get. But the basic nature of job itself is going to be challenging. The next is the prospect of a rapid growth in the organization or progression that may happen. For example, when I used to work, as a senior trainer in KPIT Cummins in the year 2007, I was, attracted to remain in the company for a good 4 years because of the progression that happened. So this relates to the growth prospects in terms of promotions, in terms of job rotation, in terms of certifications that are offered as a part of me working there as an employee. There's also a rewards and recognition mechanism where most organizations tend to provide an R&R. So there's a recognition of the merit. For example, if I have, you know, completed a challenging project in time, I am provided with a reward and a recognition. So I may be provided with, let's say, an iPod or an iPhone or some other recognition like Sodexo coupons, a spot award, comfortable working conditions, and of course, a flexi time. Now, in terms of flexi time today, when the ongoing pandemic, although it has subsided, still people are provided with a hybrid model. They can work from home and they can also work from the office in some times in the week. For example, several well-known organizations have a special program for employees who perform well. So they might be enrolled in the HiPot training and development. They might be assigned external coaches. They might be assigned with mentors for their progression. They might be alleviated from the process of from being a programmer to a senior programmer and so on. So several of the manufacturing concerns where I have conducted supervisory development trainings, management trainings, leadership trainings, I've also seen that many of the skilled employees are taken abroad for functionally testing machines before those machines are brought in the organization. So that also might be, in the sense, a non-monetary benefit. For example, in some prominent MNCs, if they are buying machines from Japan, Germany, or Italy, they, along with the manager, a few skilled operators accompany them. They test the machine, they look at the lacunae, they look at fitment of the machine on their shop floor. So going to Italy for a person who is earning a payment of about 35,000 per month is like a dream come true. They stay there for about 10 to 12 days. They do complete, working on the machine. In the evenings, on the weekend, they are able to explore the place, buy stuff for the family. Now we will work with the topic of factors that influence wage and salary structure and thereupon their administration. So the wage policies of different organizations vary to some extent. Marginal units pay the minimum necessary to attract the required number of kind of laborers. So there are these units which are of a marginal nature, okay, which conduct such kind of a payment. Some units pay higher wages because of a combination of favorable product market demand, higher ability to pay, and bargaining power of trade unions, which we shall later on discuss in detail. Now, these are some of the important factors, okay, which should be taken in consideration for the wage and salary administration. Now, these include the external factors, okay, which we have mentioned, as some of them have been mentioned earlier. These may be demand and supply. So what is the demand of the industry vis-a-vis what is the supply that they are getting? As we all know, in many organizations, especially the manufacturing and the heavy engineering units where they are unionized, they usually have a trade union, okay, and the trade union works from the perspective of the blue-collared workers and the members of their union, and they have something known as the bargaining power, where they can bargain the minimum wages for the employees' benefits. We also have the psychological and the social factors which come into play, and the technological developments that are present. Now, these other aspects include internal factors as well. Now, these include the ability to pay. For example, if an organization is thriving, its products are selling well, it has got less competitors, then it may have a better ability to pay. It also depends upon how urgent are the requirements. So for example, when I was in working in Cummins, there was a requirement for a specific cadre of Java, which was quite rare, and it was an urgent requirement. So they were ready to pay more for such software programmers. It also may be a part of the management strategy. So certain firms believe that by offering a higher remuneration, they will be able to attract the best in the market. It also may include the employee's own perspective on the requirements or the needs. So we are now going to in detail understand about the factors that were enlisted in our previous discussions. And of course, we begin with the external factors, the first one being the supply and the demand of labor. Now, as we understand that the market conditions operate at a macroscopic and a microscopic condition set. For example, certain laws may be set by the wage boards, by the governments at a national level, which may be mandated for all, you know, the labors of a specific industry. Like for example, let's say construction workers will have this specific minimum wage level across India, irrespective of whether they're in Maharashtra, they're in Tamil Nadu, or they are in Assam. Then we also move down levels where we look at the regional and the local levels. For example, let's say the Mumbai region or Mumbai area, there might be certain specific laws mandating the supply and demand. Now, as we understand, a basic law of economics states that if the demand for a certain skill, okay, is high and the supply is low, the result will be a rise in the price paid for these skills. A recent example is the reverse migration that happened, where workers moved out of the cities and went to their villages. So people who are working in Mumbai, okay, as laborers in a construction site, because of those projects at a standstill, they went back to their native UP or Bihar or Gujarat or Madhya Pradesh, and they took time to come back. Now, after a few months, the market started opening up slowly, and these construction sites needed laborers. Now, there was a shortfall, and hence, to attract those laborers before the next, or the adjacent construction site got them, people were paid a higher level of wages. The next factor is that of cost of living. So the cost of living pay criterion is usually regarded as an automatic minimum equity pay criterion. I think we have discussed this with the help of examples earlier, but we could discuss this again. Now remember the example where a person would move from Pune to Bangalore. Now the cost of living in Pune vis-a-vis Bangalore is slightly different, correct? Now again, a person who is staying in a small town would, encounter a lower cost of living as compared to somebody who is living in a large town or a city like a Mumbai, a Hyderabad, a Pune or a Bangalore. When the cost of living increases, workers and trade unions demand adjusted wages to offset the erosion of real wages. So this is also what is important, yeah? What happens is, okay, these workers, they want additional money to actually offset the erosion. Now what does this mean? The real wages do get eroded because of the higher prices. For example, if a laborer is getting a haircut, let's work with a very simple example. The laborer is getting a haircut at a local salon in his small town for 25 rupees, which may be the current price. In a city like Mumbai, Pune, Noida, Hyderabad, the same may be charged at anywhere between 100 to a 200 rupees, which is phenomenally more than what he used to pay. Now he has to get his haircut, he may have children, his wife might need to go to maybe, you know, a grooming salon at least once or twice in a year, okay, or do some self-grooming, that too would increase. So what I need to say is that they need to increase the salary or the wages accordingly, and this becomes a relevant factor as the cost of living. The next aspect is the trade union's bargaining power. Now, this word bargaining is a part of negotiations, also known as a haggling mechanism, where the trade unions, they have meetings with the management and they bargain for the interest or towards the interest of their members, who are the blue-collared workers, the contractual laborers, the operators, and so on. So the wage rates are also influenced by this specific aspect. Now, if a trade union is having a very strong presence where the organization is said to be unionized, okay, then they will have a higher bargaining power. For example, they might on an annual basis, on a, you know, 3-year note or a 5-year note, seek for the revision of the wages provided to the workers and their members. Now, if the union is weak, then the bargaining power will be correspondingly low, and it will affect the wages again. If the workers are not united and the union is weak, as I said, then the employer is usually successful in giving low wages. So they can be the dominant people. So in this case, the management is more dominant than the union. But this is usually not true of larger organizations where they have very powerful multi-leveled unions, where sometimes the union workers use elements like strikes to dissuade the employers from paying lower salaries or wages. Government legislation is the next external factor that needs to be considered, which has an impact or an influence on the wage and salary structure. So the government always is instrumental in the improvement of the living conditions of the workers. In this context, they may pass a law or a rule which is known officially as legislation to increase the minimum wages of the workers for their betterment. Now, in a developing country like ours, we have a very influential and an important law, which is quite famous, which is the Minimum Wages Act of 1948. And this was passed to empower the government to fix the minimum wages so that they do not get exploited. Now, the next important set of factors are the psychological and the social factors. Now, as we understand, the payment of wages can also be psychological and social in nature. Somebody who is a skilled worker and is getting a good pay has a psychological advantage over his, you can say, peers. So these determine in a significant measure how hard a person will work for the compensation received, or what pressures will he have to exert to get his compensation increased. So this plays heavily on the psychology of that specific employee. Also, these factors play an important role in the justification or satisfying of the conditions of equity, fairness, and justice. So the management should take these factors into consideration. So if labor A is perceiving the management as giving them a fair wage, whereas labor B does not, there might be some conflict and they might view the management in different lights. So these are some important factors which need to be considered and are a part of the external factors. The next important external factor is that of the overall economy. Now, as we know, economy is nothing but the prevailing market conditions on both a macroscopic as well as a microscopic level. aspects like inflation, aspects like demand supply, aspects like what cycle of economy are we currently under. So let's suppose that because of the current global conditions, many countries are facing a recession. Many countries are facing hyperinflation. So economy therefore plays a very important and a vital role in the determination of the wages and the salaries of employees. So as mentioned, if we are in a recession, which is nothing but a depressed economy where growth is not evident, then in this particular case, this will result in increasing the supply of the labor. Now, what do I mean by the increment in the supplies? More people will be available in the market because they might have lost their jobs, their existing jobs, or they are graduating, people are passing out, but there are less jobs. So here there is a skew, there's a deviation between the supply and the demand, okay? Where there is a surplus supply, but because the industry is not performing well, the demand has gone down. So let's suppose AI or artificial intelligence increases the number of chatbots on a contact center platform. Human beings are no longer required. It will bring down the demand in this industry, yet supply will be more because people will still keep receiving training and they will aspire to become agents in the contact center. Yeah. So this will definitely make the wages go low because we have many people to select from. The next is another important factor, which is that of the technological growth. Now, as you know, technology is growing by leaps and bounds. Every few years, we see new things like the Internet of Things. We see blockchain development. We see cryptocurrency. We see, Bitcoin mining. We have various new, technologies. So with the growth of these particular new industries, technological growth, there is also new industries which grow. And to meet the needs of those new industries, there is a need for skilled labor. Now what happens is all of a sudden you cannot have that labor. So there is a dearth or a scarcity, correct, of that particular labor. So the wage rates will differ. Okay, they will keep changing. So let's suppose in India, for a specific technology, there are only 5,000 people available and most of them are already employed. Now, what do you think? You can also pause this particular recording and give it a thought. What do you think? Will their salaries be extremely low, medium or high? What do you think? What is your opinion? So I believe you've just given it a thought by pausing this video. And the correct answer may be they will be much more than, the other industries. Because people are short, the demand is high, so the salaries will only be going up rather than staying stagnated or going down. The next one is the prevailing market rate. So, many industries, they have a certain rate. For example, there is a particular, class of workers who are into packaging. Now, if the prevailing market rate is like 150 rupees per hour, okay, which if they work for 8 hours, they will get, a substantial, maybe some, 1200 to 1300 rupees for that particular day. Now, if this is a prevailing rate and it is a well-known rate, correct? So why would somebody give a 2500 or a 3000 for the same job? So the payment or the wages will be restricted to this hourly rate. It may have a small fluctuation or a deviation, but not much. So an organizational compensation policy generally tends to conform to the wage rate payable by the industry and the community, correct? So this actually brings in some uniformity, and both the employees as well as the employers don't perceive as being exploited. So this is the reason why we have adherence to the prevailing rate of the market. Thank you.